Hello, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 394. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
We are here to talk about Nintendo and Microsoft video games, as is tradition, even if at this point I've canceled my Game Pass subscription. I only believe in our Lord and Savior, Sony.
You'll be back.
Spider-Man 2 is a very fun video game, and they have me by the balls because I like Final Fantasy VII Remake. Although, like, I was talking about this with somebody recently, explaining Final Fantasy VII Remake to them, and they're like, oh, like, is Final Fantasy VII, like, one of your favorite games? I'm like, absolutely not. I think it's fine. I played it at an age where it was impressionable upon me, and it was a little bit... I was already aware of RPGs at the time, but it was definitely a gateway that made me start to get deeper into it. The original, like, music's really good, but like the gameplay is real basic bitch RPG stuff, which is fine. It's just, you know, Final Fantasy VI and V are better, in my opinion. I like Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I'm very excited for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth because it is the most Chrono Cross bullshit that you could ever put into a video game. To the point where
it is exactly your flavor.
Yeah, to the point where I might need to rephrase my "Is there Chrono Cross bullshit in that spiritual sequel?" to "Is that Final Fantasy VII Remake bullshit in Xenoblade 4?" That's what I'm at. Did you get?
Don't bring Square Enix back into Xeno. They had their chance and they squandered it.
I mean, eventually they'll run out of other PlayStation games to port and remake.
Right.
Xenogears will have its day. Did you get the Noah and Mio amiibo?
I am planning to. There was so much bad weather here that all the shipments for like everything that came out got delayed by like a week. So like that and another code and... the totally absolutely worth it remaster of Last of Us Part Two that's definitely not a scam at all.
I'm gonna defend the Last of Us Part Two briefly. It's a $10 upgrade.
It's fine. Not worth $10. It barely requires a patch. Like, it's,
you know, in a world where Nintendo charged me like $2 to upgrade a Super Nintendo game from Wii Virtual Console to Wii U, like $10 for The Last of Us Part 2 doesn't seem Nintendo egregious. Maybe it's normal person egregious.
Honestly, there might be more new content between those two virtual consoles than there is. Like, I think they added a horde mode and a mode where you can play guitar. But as far as remastering the game, they pushed out the draw distance on the grass and then claimed they changed textures and lighting, but they didn't. Like, just straight up lies.
But anyway, Noah and Mio amiibo. I forgot that I pre-ordered them from Target, and then I got a patch from Target and was like, what's this? I'm like, oh, cool. I was looking for these.
Yeah. I never got the Pyra and Mithra ones. I've yet to see them.
Yeah, no, I haven't as well. For reasons that are pretty obvious, don't care about them as much. Happy to have Noah and Mio.
Yeah, I figured I'll run into used ones eventually. So I haven't really worried about getting amiibo. Well, I haven't worried about getting amiibo ever in my life, but I've especially not been worried about getting amiibo for the past several years.
Yeah, because it's the kind of thing where, like, there might be, like, usually it's Berube will alert us in the NWR Slack, and I'll be like, okay, I'll pre-order this one, and then I'll forget about it, like I did with Noah and Mio. But that is the extent, is that I'm not, like, waiting up all night. It's if I happen to be on a computer when, like, they go up on Best Buy, then I'll be like, I want the Zelda. I want the Ganondorf and Zelda one from Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, I might get the Ganondorf. I think the last Ganondorf amiibo I got, good. I think the last amiibo I got was the Skyward Sword one, and that's just because Nintendo sent me one.
Yeah.
Which I hope they're very happy with the content I produced that definitely wasn't at all tongue-in-cheek for their crappy amiibo implementation.
I mean, it's a really nice amiibo. My kids it's play a great with it amiibo. All the time.
Yep. Does so much. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Noah and Mio amiibo. I guess should we get the listener mail?
Yeah.
So Doug sent in a variety of questions. We're gonna tackle two of them. The first one, this is once again from Doug. Thank you for writing in. I was playing another code recollection because I'm always into weird Nintendo, And I'm stunned these ports exist. Of all the things to spend money on, we get this touch game slash motion game 3D HD reimagining. Don't get me wrong, I love that we have it, but I'd like to point out that Retro hasn't made a new game since they finished Tropical Freeze in 2013. In that time, Retro moved offices, doubled their staff, and have done jack squat publicly for 10 years. 10 years. No Mario Kart 7, and the Switch ports don't count. I don't care what games they were working on in the last decade, I want to know how they justify their existence to Nintendo. It's been 5 years since they announced Prime 4, for goodness sake. We have as many Another Code games on Switch as we do Retro games. So we'll do this one and then go to the next question. I just not to like break out like my my Microsoft Word track changes on this. Mario Kart 7 came out 13 years ago, so it is not really relevant to them not doing anything in the past 10 years, considering that they worked on that game 13 years ago.
But I can agree that they did not work on it in the past 10 years. So
yeah,
that's
fair. Yeah. if Switch ports don't count, then Another Code Recollection doesn't count in this exercise.
True.
Especially, I mean, yeah, the Tropical Freeze one basically added like funky mode and that was it. But like Metroid Prime Remastered deserves some credit, even if it was, I mean, the skill of that like HD remaster of Metroid Prime deserves as much credit as the reimagining of Another Code, although I've only played the demo of Another Code. I did actually pick it up, but I haven't gotten to it yet.
We should probably clarify, like with Metroid Prime, yes, there were a bunch of other studios that worked on that, but essentially our understanding is that Retro essentially made that port, showed it to Nintendo, and then Nintendo gave them Metroid Prime 4, and those other studios came in to help them polish up Metroid Prime Remastered. So that was like Retro did make that. They worked on that. And even if the ports aren't a big deal, like that's still manpower. And I'd imagine that their existence in Nintendo is justified in that Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze sold okay.
Yeah. And as far as the 5 years since Prime 4, which I actually looked at that, I was like, it hasn't been 5 years. And I'm like, oh God, time is destroying us all. Because we are 5 year anniversary of the like apology video that Prime 4 was going, Retro was going to take over development. So 5 years is a longer development cycle than typical Nintendo games usually.
I don't know if that's still true.
Well, 5 years for a AAA game is not weird at all, especially when you consider the other aspects of play here. Like, I don't know, a global pandemic that I would assume. I don't even know if this is much of an assumption as we can probably just state it as fact. A development process between a company in Texas being overseen by a company in Japan likely got severely impacted in 2020.
Yeah.
Because from what we know of how Retro usually operates is you have Tanabe is usually the producer that works with them. He flies to Texas a lot. What could you not do for a very long time? Fly from Japan to Texas. I guess you could have business. I was going to say like they couldn't even go to Japan. If it was business, they could go to Japan. But like tourists weren't allowed in Japan for a while. That would have severely impacted development. And like from talking to people who work in video games, and this is something that was pointed out to me in relation to Metroid Dread. A lot of people because Metroid Dread came out in 2021, Metroid Samus Returns came out in 2017, 4 years. That was pretty much the development cycle for Metroid Dread was from 2017 to 2021. It was, you know, 3-4 years of development that game underwent. And I mean, I think that game's incredible. That is a different beast than something like a Prime 4. And I would also assume that Metroid Dread did not have as many speed bumps or weirdness as Prime 4 did with the changing of hands of the previous developer, like the COVID impact for a game earlier in development versus a game near the finish line, drastically different.
Well, and I think it's important to point out, because I think we have this weird perception with Prime 4, like you said, it's been 5 years since they announced it. We don't normally get an announcement when a game enters pre-production.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, like, as far as we know, it's not so much that they took over for a company that totally wasn't Namco Bandai. It's that they started over. So we got that notification when that game entered production, probably like new conceptual phase for that game. They weren't using what was already there. So
probably some concept art.
Maybe like a drawing of Samus, but like we are essentially seeing the entire production cycle of this game, which normally we don't, you know, like you look at Tears of the Kingdom. We didn't get that announced until it had been in development for a little bit. And even that was a pretty early announcement, but like it was, they had something to show when they announced it. Whereas with Metroid, we didn't have art. Like even the logo is just the Metroid Prime 3 logo. Like, we are not used to seeing the entire length of development for a game. So I don't think it's weird at all that that's where that game's at right now.
Thinking in context of Tears of the Kingdom is that, when did the last Zelda DLC came out at the end of 2017? As far as we know, Tears of the Kingdom started development in 2018. That game came out in 2023. Ergo, if we think that Prime 4 and Tears of the Kingdom are on a similar level of notoriety, or similar size, which also, you know what game's probably going to come out and be $70?
Yeah.
Prime 4. Like, I do. I mean, like, and this isn't a compare. Like, I think the size and scope of Tears of the Kingdom and probably the budget behind that game is going to far surpass anything that Prime 4 does. But I think that, you know, just on a basic level, they are comparable games. If Prime 4 were to come out in the next year or so, that's basically the same development time.
Mm-hmm. And that's without even having to reuse a map.
Yep. Yeah. also, like, you look at stuff like, look at Rocksteady Games with that terrible looking Suicide Squad game. That game's been in development for like a decade. It could be way worse. What is Rocksteady doing for Warner Brothers other than being their patsy for a live service game that no one wants? A lot of the stuff with retro, like, one, I haven't really wanted for games in the Switch generation. Like, I love to see Prime 4, but like, hopefully, you know, relatively optimistic, like, we'll have clarity on that game this year, whether it comes out this year or if it's like a 2025 game or something. And retro, as far as we know, like, so Tropical Freeze came out 2014 and then early 2014. I believe they went through some prototyping, which everybody loves a good prototyping, considering that the 2D Mario team, not even reportedly, Nintendo said it. The 2D Mario team spent a decade prototyping ideas. So what's the 2D Mario team doing for Nintendo if they spent a decade prototyping ideas? I believe Retro went through some kind of prototyping phase. I believe they worked on some game during this late Wii U, early Switch time period, that a game that might have, you know, gotten a little ways into production might have been canceled. They were working on something else. The Prime Remastered project happened. And then I think development was paused midway through on a project that they were working on, and they kicked over to Prime 4.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, as far as Nintendo's happiness and contentment with Retro, if Nintendo did not move Retro over to Prime 4, Retro probably had a game come out a couple years ago.
Yeah, and I would also say that, like, Prime Remastered, so that came out beginning of 2023, we heard about that game for a long time before that. But even assuming it was just getting done in 2023, or, you know, end of 2022, you have to assume that game probably spent 2-3 years at least in development. It had entirely new assets. It used the same source code, but it had entirely new assets. So that probably gets you back to like 2020 or so. That may have been their COVID project. So that gets you only a 2-year gap between Tropical Freeze being remastered and Metroid Prime Remastered going into development. So there isn't much of a gap there.
Yeah, I do look forward to, like, I'd read a book on Retro Studios.
100%.
Give me the whole history.
There's spicy stuff in there too, so that would be a good time.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's something that we as Nintendo fans need to kind of come to realize. I mean, we see the impact with Pokemon. AAA dev cycles are a lot longer than they used to be during the Wii era.
Yep.
I mean, you even see companies like Ubisoft. It's either you have like 2,000 people working on an Assassin's Creed game every year, or guess what? Assassin's Creed's going to be every few years, or it's going to become a live service game.
Yep.
So I'd rather have Metroid Prime 4 take forever as opposed to having the Metroid Prime live service game.
Well, I think it was one of the Microsoft like Xbox execs. It might have been Matt Booty. I probably just think of his name because he has a fun name.
He does have a fun name.
But he made the comment that just realistic dev time on a AAA game at this point is just 6 years. Like that's how long it takes to make a game. Because I think people were asking him about, you know, like, you've bought all these studios. Where are their games? And he's like, well, they take time.
Yeah. And a lot of those, like, I mean, you look at the companies that Microsoft bought, because 2018 was when I think they really started their spree. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A handful that, like, you look at Double Fine, they put out Psychonauts 2. That also didn't come out until, like, 2020 or 2021. That was a game that, like, they were working on before they were bought by Microsoft. And even Redfall. That was a game that was already in development. Even like the Sony exclusives that Bethesda had. Now you are integrating a team, you know, trying to have them transfer projects over, and then from there starting up that process as being owned by a bigger corporation. Like, that stuff's gonna take some time just to get those processes in place.
We're just now getting to the point where they have games coming out with that were developed entirely while they owned the companies making them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this year, I think, is the first time that we're getting that from a lot of those companies they acquired.
Well, I guess that this is a good segue into Doug's second question that we're going to answer. For most of my life, I have heard Nintendo should go third party, yet here we are and it's Microsoft doing it. We live in a world where it's highly likely Microsoft will be the biggest publisher on the Switch 2. Let that sink in.
So this has been coming up a lot recently because of some comments from, how do you say the name of the CEO of Microsoft?
Satya Nadella.
Thank you. That guy. He made a comment in an interview. Let me actually find the exact quote, because it's the wording is important.
But it's also, like you can find the exact wording. I think I came across this quote, but more saw the discourse. It's also like, this has been Microsoft's plan, like, kind of big picture for a decade. They extremely want Game Pass and Xbox content to be across their consoles, your mobile devices, your computer. And yes, in some cases, you know, it bleeding over to rival, quote unquote, rival consoles.
Right.
Like Sony and Nintendo. It is the kind of thing where, by the nature of how Microsoft operates, it's not a bad hustle.
So the exact quote, we think that we now have the ability to really do what we have always set out to do, which is build great games and deliver them to folks across all platforms, which is Xbox and consoles, the PC, and now even including mobile gaming and cloud gaming. So people are taking this as him saying that he's bringing games to all of the consoles, which I don't think is how I would read that statement. It could be that way, but I would just say he's saying we're bringing them to all these platforms. Here's a list of platforms like Xbox and PC and mobile gaming and cloud gaming. Like, you have to remember that when Xbox says multiple platforms, what they mean is platforms that have Game Pass on them. And so they will reference, and that's something that you're not used to because Nintendo and PlayStation don't do that, because they don't.
It's the Nintendo 3DS has, family right, of systems.
Right. Nintendo has a platform. PlayStation has a platform. Microsoft has multiple platforms. So they'll refer to them as plural when they're just talking about their own platforms. So that's one element of this. It's just, a misunderstanding or a kind of attribution of that quote. The second thing is that, let's say, so the rumors cropped up around Hi-Fi Rush and that coming to Switch, which, let me be clear, I would be delighted to review Hi-Fi Rush on Switch. I love that game. It was in my top 10 games of the year last year. Go back a couple episodes. Yeah, like, I think it would do really well on Switch. It'd be great. Is it coming to Switch? I have no idea. But were they to do that, that wouldn't be like a new and different thing like Neil was talking about. We have multiple Xbox published games on Switch, and that goes back even further. You can go back to, you know, the original Minecraft. After Microsoft bought that, they were still putting it out on other platforms. Some of that was existing contracts, some of it was because they like making money. And then on Switch, you've got Cuphead, both Ori games, I believe there was some Microsoft money tied up in Super Lucky's Tale. Like, you have Minecraft Legends, Minecraft Dungeons, you have the Minecraft Telltale series. None of those were contractually obligated to come out on other platforms. They just did that. Like, I feel like I'm seeing a lot of people reacting as if this is like a weird change for them, and it just doesn't. This has kind of always been how they've been operating. They're not as isolating with their exclusives as other companies are. I think there maybe is an argument that sometimes they should be a little more isolating than they are. There are instances where I think it would help them, but I think when they see an opportunity for a game to do make them more money on another platform, they'll do that. They have them, like we've seen since they bought Bethesda, you had Ghostwire Tokyo and you had Deathloop both come out on PlayStation because they're honoring contracts, but Microsoft has the money to buy their way out of those contracts if they wanted to, but they decided they wanted to release them on those platforms. Maybe more of their stuff will come out on Nintendo. It probably will. Like, I think there's precedent to say that will happen, but I wouldn't look at it as, oh, Xbox is going third party. I would say Xbox is doing exactly what they've been doing, which is recognizing that they're losing, recognizing that they're in third place, and being willing to subsidize their income by taking advantage of the other platforms. And I assume for Microsoft, it's just the case that like they've always been something like they've always released their games on multiple platforms. They've always had them on Xbox and PC. They've been doing stuff on mobile for a long time. Like, they're just in a good position to be able to do that.
They also have like infinite resources.
Yes.
Microsoft has a lot of money. Sony, I mean, it's something that I feel like always comes up, but it always bears repeating, and that like Xbox being a part of Microsoft, Xbox has a lot more access to Microsoft resources. Sony and PlayStation. PlayStation is a division of Sony. And I guess technically Xbox is, but the way that Sony's structured, because you have, oh God, what was it? Like when Sony had that like mobile phone that had games on it or something, that I don't think PlayStation was really involved with that. Like that was another department in Sony being like, oh, we're going to do this now. That happens pretty often within Sony.
And PlayStation is sort of the only branch of Sony that's doing well.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen this where with Microsoft, Xbox can, like, Xbox bombed the Xbox One generation. That was horrible.
Yeah.
If PlayStation had a generation like the Xbox One, PlayStation might not still exist. But for Microsoft, Xbox bombing that, it's still worth it to them to be in this circle. And so, like, they're just PlayStation or Sony. On the other hand, if PlayStation fails, not only does PlayStation fail, I think Sony as a company goes down. Sony is on much less firm footing than Microsoft.
We have some breaking news.
Oh, what's up?
Two things. One, new Smash Brothers Ultimate Spirits coming on January 26th from Hades, 13 Sentinels, and eBaseball Powerful Pro. Which I don't really have anything else other to say to that other than that's kind of funny.
Okay.
Also, on April 8th, online play and other functionality that uses online communication will end service for Nintendo 3DS and Wii U. Spot Pass is gonna die.
Oh, my Metroid Prime Federation Force.
Yeah. We might need to do some final Kid Icarus Uprising online matches before it inevitably gets announced for an HD remaster.
That's you know, if I were a Twitter Nintendo fan, that's exactly what I would assume is why they're shutting down the servers.
Yeah,
it's because they don't want to compete with themselves, because that's how it works. Neil,
Kid Icarus Uprising coming out in May, right? And that's the dream.
I mean, we do have we have some open windows.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much after March. I mean, I guess the Splatoon DLC is probably going to get some heavy marketing.
God, that is the big thing for this year.
Yeah, it is.
At least, you know what I take comfort in? That in that shutting down of servers, at least we're taking one of the Splatoon games with us.
Oh, God. And that was still getting play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yep, we're going to lose Splatoon 1, which was the only original Splatoon game.
Yeah, pure.
Yep.
Yeah, no, this sucks. It's inevitable. I believe Nintendo previously said that stuff was gonna wind down, but now April 8th is D-Day for it. Wii U will have lasted 12 years. 3DS,
I mean, longer 13. Than it had any right to.
Yeah.
takes a lot of the best Mario Maker content with it.
Yep. Although I think that already got messed up.
Did it?
Okay. Through, because I think like the service that they had that you could share levels like didn't stop it working.
Oh, okay, cool. And just nobody cared because it was Wii.
Yeah. I mean, I think people did care, but there were like 12 people that cared.
Right.
I love Wii U. I hated interacting with Wii U, but there's a lot of good games on that.
And I have a lot of nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
It feels like way too recent of a system to have nostalgia for, but I have a lot of nostalgia for it.
I mean, it is that system's been dead for 10 years. Let's get true. Real.
Well, when did it come out? 2012? It's been dead for like 11 years.
I would say when Holiday 2013 did not save it, that's when it was like, okay, 100%. It was like 90% dead after the day after it came out. When they like, because we also had 3DS recently, where like 3DS flopped it at the start.
Right. There was a chance.
Nintendo saved it the first holiday season.
Yeah, no, there was in the early Wii U days, there was a belief that like, okay, we've seen this work before. They might be able to turn it around. And they did not. The year of Luigi could not save the Wii U.
Yeah. Yeah, it is wild to think that the Wii U has been just, I mean, it is almost 12 years old and it died about 12 years ago. So.
Yep. Yep. Died on the way home from the store in the backseat of my car.
Failed consoles. I wouldn't know what that is, covering Nintendo since 2017. But everything's great.
Right. That's when Nintendo World Report started, actually. Little known fact.
It is funny looking at 2024 and how like it's gonna get like late stage 3DS very quickly.
Yeah.
Because right now it's just like I'm looking at the landscape, just like what indie games are coming out. And it also doesn't help that the eShop is just an absolute like shithole pit of doom. And that you go there and they're like 15 hentai games, a bunch of bundles for crap that I don't care about. One bundle for two games that I care about, but came out 15 years ago.
I would love for that store to give me the option to filter out specific words. Because I feel like I can make it way more usable with like just I need to filter out hentai and clock. Those are the two words. If I can just filter those out, we will be golden.
But it's also like you look at like the we're getting like esoteric ports and reimaginings of old esoteric games.
Oh yeah,
we're getting Peach in a starring role.
Right,
there's probably gonna be another Kirby game in the next 12 months.
Right,
RPG remakes. Remember when Mario and Luigi were remade on 3DS? No, you don't, because no one bought it. And like the only third party games are like Capcom with an Ace Attorney collection, and then Sega or Atlas with some kind of weird shit that is going to be really cool, but people are going to miss out on it because it came out late in the system's life.
Hey, we're probably maybe getting Biomutant next month, so.
I feel like your tone. You're just supporting my point.
Yeah, no, that's the system seller. Biomutant's gonna save the Switch. If you thought it was successful so far, just you watch.
I'm curious. Like, it's no knock against the Switch if you know in its like 15th year of existence it starts to slip. I'm curious to kind of see like how the decline is gonna happen. How quickly is it gonna happen? I tend to think it'll be a little slow, but I wouldn't be surprised if we just have like a quarterly report and like, oh, it did. Like,
yeah, I think it'll really, for system sales, absolutely. I think the games will really depend on if Switch 2 is backwards compatible, then I think we see Switch cling to life for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if there's any sort of like enhancement setup like there is on PlayStation 5 and Series X, where I can put in a Switch 1 game and like, oh, it plays at a higher resolution or whatever. Like, if there's any of that, then I think Switch games, cross-gen stuff, hangs around for a long time.
$10 upgrades.
Oh, yeah. That's the other nice thing I'll say about Xbox. I believe they made that against the rules on their system. You cannot charge for upgrades.
Smart delivery, baby.
Instead, people just release two separate versions of the game. But, like, they tried, you know, so they get credit for trying.
Yeah, so speaking of Xbox, going back to them after breaking news. So Xbox had the first Direct of the year.
Yeah.
Their developer Direct. The thing that was most exciting to me was a game that was not originally scheduled. Oh crap! Visions of Mana, is that yes, the generic right. word that yep. is before? That game looks great. I'm not gonna call myself. I mean, I somewhat famously don't enjoy Secret of Mana, but I think Trials of Mana in both Super Nintendo and like janky racist remake.
Oh, was it racist? I don't remember the racism.
There's always racism.
I'm sure.
Tribalism. I enjoy Trials of Mana a whole lot. And generally like kind of like the Mana series, but Secret of Mana just never clicked with me. The music's very good. Visions of Mana looks real fun. And someone pointed this out to me. I did not notice it initially, but in the wake of Square Enix being like, yeah, we used Midjourney for some stuff in Foam Stars, that entire developer direct is just like, these are the artists. They made the art. We did not generate the art in other ways. Here is Koichi Ishii from Grezzo. He came back and he worked on some of the art.
Humans. Yeah. No, that's totally right.
Yep. Yeah. That game, I'm looking forward to that game. I'll probably play it on PlayStation and not Xbox because that's what my life is.
I'm curious about it, but I feel like at most what it would probably cause me to do is go back and actually restart and finish Trials of Mana. Because like it kind of looks a lot like the same game.
Visions of Mana has all the markings of a Switch 2 launch title that comes out a couple months after it's released this summer on the other consoles.
Oh, yeah.
That is like how I Am Setsuna came out at Switch launch. Visions of Mana will absolutely be on Switch 2 within the first calendar year.
Honestly, I wouldn't even be surprised to see it on Switch 1 because I'm pretty sure it's still Unreal Engine 4. Like,
I mean, when they did announce it, Switch was not included.
Oh, yeah. No, I know they haven't announced it yet, but I could see it happening a few months later, even on base Switch.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we'll like, because it could be the thing, you see this with indie games every now and then, where saving the reveal for, like, an indie world, so, like, you'll have it where, Chicory came out, is that a Sony exclusive when it came out?
Maybe.
Yeah, but, like, Chicory came out, and was just PlayStation. Absolutely, that development team was probably like, well, we're gonna make Switch and Xbox versions, but guess what they did? The Switch version was part of an indie world, and it was a shadow drop. How did they get into that? Because the fact that there was a Switch version of that game was not announced. So Nintendo could say, here is a new announcement that we have in our indie world. I believe the Xbox version of Chicory had a similar execution of the announcement. Even Tunic, another one, Xbox exclusive, then had, I think the PlayStation version was in like a Summer Games Fest, and then I think it was a Direct that had Tunic on Switch.
Yeah.
And Tunic on Switch, I think, came out on the same day as the PlayStation version, if memory serves me correctly.
I think that's right.
So it could be that Visions of Mana is not announced for Switch because when Nintendo rolls out some third parties for Switch 2, maybe they will include Visions of Mana. And when we hear about the Switch 2 version of Visions of Mana, there'll be also there's a version on Switch 1.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that's possible. Switch 2, almost for sure. I feel like after Switch, we're going to see a lot more launch day support for Switch 2. I do think that's funny. A few episodes ago when we went back and like ranked the Switch years, you weren't here for that, but it was weird to look back at 2017 and remember that like, oh yeah, early on in the Switch, like we were coming off the Wii U. We didn't know if this was going to work. Like,
yep.
The third parties kind of weren't there yet. So I feel like
Capcom famously got, they were like, here's a 2D Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
And did not bring like some no brainers to the system for like a year or two.
Yeah. So I feel like Switch 2, there's going to be a lot of companies. I mean, I'm not going to say his name because he doesn't work there anymore, but a guy that doesn't work at Activision anymore made the comment that like, they missed out on Switch and it was a mistake. And by the time they realized it, it was kind of too late. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of those companies that we didn't see much of on Switch 1 that are going to be there day one on Switch 2. Like I expect EA to have stuff on Switch 2 day one.
Will Madden be on Switch 2?
Does
EA want to make me happy?
You sure would think so. I don't know if there's any way to make, like, you're looking at the follow-up to one of the most successful video game platforms of all time. If there is a way to put your game on it, put your game on it. Yeah. Like,
I think they're still making like PS4 versions of Madden.
Oh yeah.
I think they have to, because I played the PC version, which is absolute trash fire dog shit based on an old gen thing.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people complaining about the because Madden came back to PC a couple years. I got it the year I got a Steam Deck. I still played a lot of it because that's how I do with Madden. But like, it was just like comically broken.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. But I also love looking at this, that it is, I think Activision has a game released for every year of Switch's existence.
Like, right.
Blizzard Arcade Collection, Skylanders Imaginators, Crash Trilogy, Spyro Trilogy, Crash 4, Crash Team Racing, and Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
Like, this basically, they've had a game released for every year. Most of them are just late ports.
Yep. Well, and the funny thing is, I believe a lot of those late ports performed better than their initial launch on other platforms.
Yep.
Maybe you should.
Tony Hawk 1 and 2 ports, real strong on Switch, too.
All those, yeah. I mean, overall, Activision's ports were. I mean, the Spyro Trilogy they ports are great.
And they bought and closed a lot of good companies.
Yes.
Free Raven. Let Raven cook.
Does Toys for Bob still exist?
Or I don't know. Rumors that they died. What are they up to? You've got to look up your Satya Nadella quote. Let's see
take
how
your
Toys
time.
For Bob is doing.
Yeah. Because they did.
Not like, dead yet.
Okay. Have they done anything?
Crash 4.
Yes. I think have they done anything since then? Have they announced anything? They didn't do Crash Team Rumble, did they?
They worked on Modern Warfare 3.
Okay, so they're dead. 2, got it.
And Warzone.
Okay.
And they did Crash Team Rumble.
Oh, okay. Well, that, you know. Oh, yeah, how the mighty have fallen.
Don't give a shit.
I really hope that somebody at Microsoft realizes they bought a company that's really good at 3D platformers. And that Microsoft has some 3D platformers in their catalog of IPs.
What other studios do... Oh my god, the Activision former studios list is horrifying.
Yeah. What are some of your favorites?
Beenox is still around. I believe Beenox is in full-on support mode. Yes. Beenox has been working on Call of Duty games exclusively since porting Crash 4 and Tony Hawk 1 and 2 to Switch and other platforms.
Yep.
It seems like Crash Team Racing in 2019 was the last game that they worked on originally.
Man.
How fucking depressing.
Yep.
Let's see. High Moon Studios. They made a couple of decent Transformers games. The last time they worked on an original game was Deadpool in 2013.
Oof.
Since then, they've worked on Destiny 1 and 2 and a bunch of Call of Duties.
I feel like all of these stories are going to end in very similar ways.
Infinity Ward. I mean, like, they always made that stuff. Radical Games, who made some incredible Simpsons games, a pretty solid Hulk game back in, you know, 2 decades ago. That's fucked up. And the Prototype Games, they worked on Destiny. I don't know if Radical Entertainment still even exists. Six employees.
Oh yeah, they're doing fine.
Six employees.
Healthy company.
Radical Entertainment. Oh god, Raven Software. They've been in the. They made complete and utter masterpieces.
Yep.
I mean, oh god, like Heretic, Hexen, even Jedi Knight, X-Men Legends, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, Wolfenstein, Singularity. Oh god. And then they've been working on Call of Duty games for the past 15 years.
Yep.
Sledgehammer Games, Toys for Bob, Treyarch, still making Call of Duty games.
Treyarch gets credit for being like the dudes who were like, no, we can put the Call of Duty games on Wii and you can't stop us. So Treyarch will always have a special place in my heart for just being dumb enough to make it happen.
And then the graveyard at Activision, Bizarre Creations, RIP, Budcat Creations. There's actually a really fascinating oral history of Budcat Creations because they are like the only major game developer in Iowa ever.
Oh, hey, that's where I am.
Yeah. I don't know if you have you ever seen that? The story of Budcat Creations?
Actually, I have.
Yeah, it's very good. Freestyle Games, who made DJ Hero and then I believe worked on a Nintendo game. Although, wait. Freestyle Games still exists. They're now owned by Ubisoft.
Oh.
Good for them. Luxoflux. I just remember that name. Massive Entertainment. Also sold to Ubisoft. Because they worked on that Avatar game. Neversoft, who terrible boner name, and then made Tony Hawk, RIP. Red Octane helped out with Guitar Hero, RIP. Shaba Games, who the first press event that I ever went to, talked with folks from Shaba Games about Spider-Man Web of Shadows, which is pretty dope. They did not want to be stuck to just one IP in an era when Activision was like, you are the Call of Duty studio, you are the Spider-Man studio. So then Shaba Games was closed shortly after they made a good game.
Teach them to speak up.
Vicarious Visions is now Blizzard Albany. That's sad.
Yeah. At least let them keep the name.
Yeah, it is. What a bummer.
I really hope that part of the Microsoft, I mean, the Activision acquisition was to get King, not anything in Activision or Blizzard.
Oh, yeah.
But I really hope that Microsoft takes a good look through that IP portfolio, because there is some stuff in that company's history that I hope they do something with.
So anything else for the developer direct? I mean, I mentioned Visions of Mana.
Oh, sure. I mean, Indiana Jones looks cool. I'm glad that Machine Games is doing first person, because that's what they do. They're the Wolfenstein guys. They know how to make a really just...
Those games are fun.
They make a smooth, great-feeling first-person game. I think Avowed looks neat. I like...
Avowed is like, hey, Starfield wasn't quite Skyrim. What if we gave you Skyrim?
What if, yeah, what if it's Skyrim, but like technically it's Pillars of Eternity? I'm down for Avowed. I like first person Western RPGs. And
was Avowed, that's 2024, right?
Yes, that is. They didn't give a date. They just said fall. Or yeah, I believe that one was that. And
yeah, because Indie was also 2024.
Everything in this direct is 2024.
Q3, Q4 is what it's listed as.
I would not be surprised to see Indie slip. I was surprised that our first glimpse of Indie had it coming out this year. So I would not be surprised to see that fall, but they seem, hopefully they're, I don't know, we'll see. And then Hellblade 2, I am disappointed that Hellblade 2 isn't getting a physical release. I understand that it's a smaller game, so like I get it, but that is one that I'm excited enough for Hellblade 2. I would have bought a physical version in addition to playing it on Game Pass. But I'm very excited for that game. I think it looks beautiful. Aura History Untold. Quite my kind of strategy game, but like, sure, it looks good. And I think that's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was a solid. I like the way they do their January direct of essentially announcing four things they're going to talk about. Seems consistent that there's a surprise in there every time. I say every time. It's the second time they've done this. It's a nice event to start the year off with. And I like how they just show actual gameplay and a little behind the scenes look. And I like the format.
Yeah, it's a good format. They've kind of settled into it. It's nice.
Yep.
I guess we'll talk about the I've been seeing it trending all the time. I guess everybody's just really into Pokemon again.
Yeah, that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah. So my oldest saw Pokemon Concierge on Netflix. It came out at the end of last year. Just adorable, like 4-episode stop motion show that is very weird, but very fun. And that kind of set my son off into really caring about Pokemon. We've watched some of the movies that are available on Netflix, watched some of the old anime, cartoon and everything, and played a little bit of the games. Although he's 5. So the concept of saving in a video game in this modern lazy era where most things autosave, foreign to him. So he's just been, I've got both Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. He's been playing Let's Go Pikachu. Pikachu is his jam. He found an old stuffed animal that I have of Pikachu. He is currently sleeping with that Pikachu next to him. When he goes to school, he will put Pikachu in front of a toy cash register and say that Pikachu has to work while he goes to school. And then he comes back home and he asks me, how did Pikachu do at work today?
Have you given any negative performance reviews to Pikachu?
No. Like, he's like, did Pikachu cry during work? I'm like, nah, he was fine. and the Pikachu is 8 years old, like his cousin. I think he confused the concept of levels to age, which fair.
Oh, that makes sense.
But so he's been playing Pokemon. But his him playing Pokemon is like dicking around in Pallet Town and Viridian City in the forest, and then turning off the game and losing his progress and kicking over to play Kirby or something. But it got me to start a new save file for Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, and hot damn, that game's really fun.
It's so good.
Like, the catching mechanic, like, it's how it minimizes like the actual combat and keeps it to just trainer battles is very smart. I mean, it reminds me of some of the smart decisions that Arceus made. I will also say that it's kind of a way, like, I feel like it kind of originated with Let's Go as far as like how I'm even playing Sword and Shield and Scarlet and Violet, where like Scarlet and Violet at a certain point, and I think Sword and Shield, they made catching Pokemon more of a pain in the ass. Like, I'm just using Ultra Balls when I first get into battle. I'm basically treating it like it's Pokemon Go at this point. But, like, Pokemon Let's Go is just such a good remake of that game, because those old games are extremely janky. Spoilers, it turns out that Pokemon was a janky, broken technical game the whole time.
Yep.
Missing No is just charming and whimsical. But Pokemon Let's Go, like, it takes what I love about those original games, what kind of captured my heart and my mind when I was a kid, and then I just get to like romp through it and relive it. It's super fun. It also works because when he is playing this game, whenever he has a question about it, I know the shit like the back of my hand.
Right.
Like, it can be, I can give you typings. Like, yeah, it's Gen 1. It's I replayed Pokemon Red and Blue on my Game Boy multiple times.
Yeah.
I would like trade all the meaningful Pokemon to a friend's copy and then start a new file. Like, that's how I operated. So yeah, now I'm in Lavender Town now, just having a real grand old time with it, taking my time getting catch combos, trying to, you know, get rarer Pokemon earlier and stuff. Just a really, really enjoyable game. Reminds me of why I really just adore that series, even if Scarlet and Violet are janky, broken technical garbage. Also, and I mentioned it, if any patrons listen to our Game of the Year deliberations, which, plug, go over to our Patreon, you can listen to a couple hours of that. The second DLC for Scarlet and Violet's excellent. Just a nice area to explore, a decent, compelling story that's really connected between the first two. I think the first DLC is a little weaker. Had a lot of fun with recent Pokemon games and even replaying one from a couple years ago. And two, there will likely be a Pokemon game out this holiday season. Who knows what it could be?
Yeah.
You know, fingers crossed for another Legends game. I don't think they'll make another Let's Go game, but that would be pretty cool. Also worth noting, Pokemon Let's Go runs perfectly fine on Switch.
Oh, no, Let's Go runs bullshit. Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd even say it looks kind of nice.
Yeah, it's a wonder what you can do when you take a 3DS engine and just upscale it for HD.
Well, the problem is, I think that's also what they did in Scarlet and Violet, and I think it's time to let that engine go.
Yeah.
No, like, Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee did so much to, like, those are the games that sort of felt like they were finally willing to rethink a lot of their gameplay mechanics, and it works so, because that's the thing that's still great. Even in the flaws of Arceus and in Scarlet and Violet, is the way they've redesigned their game mechanics is incredible. They just need the game to work around it. But like, their mechanics are there and are better than they've ever been.
Game Freak is a very good game developer that is hampered by being overwhelmed by the technical demands of HD consoles. Because keep in mind, until literally this video game, which Pokemon Let's Go was also, I believe it was heavily outsourced, which maybe they should do a little bit more of that. But Pokemon Let's Go was their first mainline HD game in 2018. It's much like how like Wii U games took forever because Nintendo was learning HD, except for Pokemon games being a multimedia property cannot be delayed.
Right. Yeah, they just have to happen. I've said it before, but can you imagine what Game Freak could make if they had a 5-year dev cycle?
Yep.
Like, they do so much in a year. The things they could do with 5, I know they don't want to miss out on having a Pokemon game every year, but like, holy crap, the game that would happen after 5 years would be amazing.
Yeah.
But Neil, that's not the Pokemon game that I've been hearing about online.
What Pokemon game have you been hearing about?
I've been hearing about this one where the Pokemon are your pals.
Oh, the Pokemon with guns?
Yeah. So Pal World happened, and there
Yes, it did.
I'm not going to say it came out. I'm going to say it happened. And there, so two things, because I do want to clarify something. I was here. Yeah. Pokemon with guns is kind of the marketing scheme for that game. To be clear, Pow World is a survival game with farming. It is not a Pokemon game. Like it is not an RPG, at least not in that way. It's closer to something like Ark than it is to Pokemon. But a lot of the controversy around it is that during its development, you know, really keen-eyed people noticed that it might have taken some slight influence from Pokemon in its monster designs. And there were, essentially, since it's been announced, some accusations that this might be plagiarism. Since the game has come out, there have now been reports of the actual 3D models being lined up with the 3D models from Pokemon and going, hey, like, a lot of these appear to literally share geometry or at least the exact proportions. And if you've never built 3D models before, even things having the same proportions to this degree where their proportions are virtually one-to-one is borderline impossible to happen in a single model in a game. In Pow World, it's happened with multiple. Like, it's still very much allegedly, but in my opinion, they 100% downloaded models from Pokemon and modified them. Or at the very least, essentially traced over those models to get the proportions of them, which is still plagiarism. Like this does not happen on accident. You can ask anybody who's ever built anything in 3D. The commonalities here, yes, I know there are some spots where like the geometry isn't exactly the same as far as the actual breakdown of vertices, but that just means they used the subdivide button in Blender before they exported it. And so there's been a lot of questions about like, why hasn't it, like, will Nintendo shut this down? Why haven't they? And I've been very interested in following that. Nintendo did shut down a mod today that modded in actual Pokemon into the game. From a modder who had that mod behind a Patreon paywall, so they were essentially charging for assets they didn't own to be modded into a game built from assets that the people who made the game probably didn't own. Yeah, you're gonna get a takedown for that. But just following all of this, I've been very interested to see, like, because I look at it and I go, how does Nintendo not shut this down? Like, what's stopping them? And I've heard a few different, like, actual IP lawyers talking about it. And they've pointed out a lot that probably the biggest hurdle for Nintendo is when you're proving, like, fair use laws like this. One of the things you have to prove is it having a negative effect on your brand, either in image or in value. And so essentially Nintendo would need to prove that Pow World is hurting the sales of Pokemon. Which I don't know if you're familiar with the sales of Pokemon, but that seems unlikely to happen.
I mean, talking about how they're probably going to reveal a new Pokemon game coming out later this year. Typically, you know, February around then is usually when they do the announcement of the game coming out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
If that has a lot of negativity around it, might be a case.
Nintendo may use that. I think that seems to be the thing that Nintendo would have a hurdle with right now, is I think that they have some pretty good evidence that there is probably, if not stolen content, which I do think they can essentially prove that at this point, but even just heavily influenced content, I think it's very easy for them to prove that to the point of it probably being plagiarism. But apparently my understanding is they need to prove that it's had a negative effect on their brand. So it will be interesting to see if that happens. And while I think it's like, I'm not personally trying to protect Nintendo's intellectual property, I think it's weird to watch portions of the internet come out in defense of protecting Nintendo's IPs. Like, that's Nintendo's job. Leave them alone. But I find it gross that these people are making money off of this when it's so obviously built from stolen property. So I'll be very interested to see if Nintendo does wind up going after it or not. Or if, like, the game's not good, so it may just die in a month. We'll have to wait and see. This also isn't the first time this developed. Like, they also made Craftopia, which, if you've ever seen Craftopia, hey, it's Breath of the Wild, but with survival crafting elements like Ark. Like, they have done this before. Their thing is that they take a popular Nintendo game, they make it Ark, and then they throw in a bunch of clashing Unity assets that, like, maybe they own. This is just what this company does. And it's, I don't know, I find it just kind of gross. And I'm disappointed to see how many people just kind of react to it. And, like, they kind of react to the gimmick of, like, oh, the sheep has a gun. Like, that's hilarious. When I think there's just grosser stuff going on under the surface that I wish we wouldn't so actively get behind. But yeah, that's my pseudo soapbox on Pal World.
Yeah, my only soapbox with it is that I think Pokemon is great.
Yeah, well, that's the
There are issues with it, but I checked after playing that DLC. I'm well over 100 hours into to Pokemon Violet.
Yeah,
I've had a blast with that game. I also did have a unicorn run where I didn't really hit any miserable bugs. I'm sure if I had a more negative experience with it, I probably would have put less time into it, but it's a hell of a game.
I have seen that of, like, how did this small indie developer make a more competent game than Game Freak?
They're making it on fucking PC and right. Xbox.
Like, they have way more power, and it's way easier to build a game with a bunch of monsters when you can just steal them all instead of making your own. And then the rest of it, you just get off the Unity Asset Store. Like, yeah, it's Steam is full of this garbage. Like, this is the hentai game portion of the eShop. Like, this is trash. It's not comparable. But yeah, that's Pal World. It'll probably be, by the time this episode comes out, maybe Nintendo will have already taken it down. I don't know.
I think that'll do it for the episode here at Connectivity. Yeah. Thank you for joining me, John.
Of course.
You can email us listener mail like Doug did. Thanks, Doug. Connectivity@NintendoReport.com. We'll be back next week or the week after. Who knows? I guess we also what if we just didn't do the Paper Mario Game Club? That seems like a lot of work.
I mean, I wouldn't be upset. The only part I would be upset about is
Matt and Alex do it for April Fools.
I would just be upset because we were going to, like, sprinkle in some other games to spread it out. And I just wanted to make everybody play ReCore.
Yeah. But we just play ReCore instead?
We could just do a ReCore game club if you want.
Yeah. Like, I don't even need to re-up on Game Pass. I bought that game. Yeah. I own it.
Yeah, I got a physical copy of ReCore.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I got it for like $6.
Yeah, that's usually the price. I'm pretty sure it came out at like 40.
Yeah. It was not too long after it came out that I got it for like $6.
Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, ReCore is great. All right, talk to y'all later.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.